Karen, where were you born?
I was born in Perth, Western Australia, and it's one of the most remote cities in the world and the smallest city in Australia. But it has a beautiful landscape. It's got gorgeous white sandy beaches for miles down the coast, and it's a lovely place to live. But in terms of musical exposure, it was fairly restricted. And I can't really remember as a child having a wide variety of musical influences. But it was great. The beach was lovely.
Did you come from a musical background?
You could tell my mum was really musical. She certainly listened to and appreciated good music. And I remember spending many hours with her listening and listening to music and dancing around the room. But she came from quite a poor background, and there wasn't really an opportunity for her to study music. So consequently, when we were growing up, she was really determined to give us a good education. So we had music lessons from a really young age and many other lessons. My mum was very musical. And then on my father's side, I think his brother, he had one brother who had five daughters, and he was really strict about their musical studies. And so my cousins were all playing three or four instruments from a really young age. And when the girls became sort of teenagers, he decided to move them to London because the eldest was accepted into the Royal Academy. And so the whole family moved to London, and out of the five girls, three of them became professional musicians and formed a band called the Ferris Sax. So I guess you could say that there were musical genes on both sides of the family, really.
Do you remember your earliest musical influences?
I was the youngest of four children, so my first musical memories listening to the music that my mum played while the others were at school, and she played things like Henry Mancini, Burt Bacharach, Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra, and musical scores, things like The Sound of Music. I think my mum also listened to a lot of singers, Sarah Vaughan, Lena Horne, Nat King Cole, and Perry Como were favourites of hers. And then sort of the more contemporary singers like Roberta Flack and Karen Carpenter. She was a favourite of mum's. So, yeah, I guess I heard a lot of singers and a lot of light instrumental things, popular sort of Latin bossa nova records. And then at school I listened, you know, just to popular music that all my friends were listening to. And my favourite pastime was singing along to ABBA records. And I think that was my earliest memory of wanting to be a singer at about 8 or 9 years old.
Do you remember if the schools that you went to early on in your life had a good musical program?
The first school that I went to was a small Catholic school, so there wasn't really a music program there, although we did do a lot of church singing, and it wasn't till later on that I realised that all the cadences and familiar sounds that you hear in hymns were actually really valuable music lessons. And then I did learn guitar at that school actually for 2 years, and I had been playing piano and learning privately from the time I was about 6 years old. Being the youngest of four children, I wanted to do what they were doing and virtually sort of taught myself by listening to them. But in high school, the high school I went to had a fairly strong music department and theatre department, and it was renowned for putting on really good musicals. So I think when I was about 16 or 17, I did play the lead role in Guys and Dolls and was really, you know, very busy in the musical sort of theatre department.
Did you have a tendency to hang around people that were musically inclined?
I wouldn't really say I hung around musicians as such, but a lot of my friends were interested in music, and at university there were various amateur bands and things. My older brother was very into music, and he was in quite a high-profile retro sort of psychedelic 60s band. So a lot of my university friends were very impressed by that. And I guess I did get to witness him and the band doing their rehearsals at home, and my brother was really immersing himself in music and guitar. So I got to witness that, which was great. And I don't know, it was a real melting pot of mostly independent sounds because it was such a small town. We really only got top 40 music, and then the alternative reaction to that, which was a more sort of indie grunge thing that was very popular at the time.
Were you in any bands growing up, Karen?
Yeah, some I'd rather forget, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure. Do you remember what the first musical instrument you were attracted to as a child?
The first instrument I was attracted to was piano, because we had one in the house, and being the youngest child, as I said, I desperately wanted to take lessons and play like my siblings could play. So I think the first thing I did was played piano by ear, and then started having lessons about 6 or 7. Unfortunately, my oral skills were much stronger than my sight reading, and I managed to fool the teachers that I could read the music really well until the pieces became too long to memorize, and then I became a bit unstuck. But nevertheless, I kept playing, and have been sort of catching up ever since.
I'm sure when you were a child, you listened to quite a bit of music. Who are your favorite artists?
Oh, I listened to a real range of things. Obviously, my mum's collection, which I've already mentioned. And I was very much into dance. So I think we performed to a lot of light classical pieces, which were, you know, favourites of mine at the time. And then, obviously, the pop music of my time, you know, which was ABBA, and then there was sort of the 70s disco soul that was huge, things like Donna Summer, those kind of things, which I loved when I was younger. And then moving on to sort of the 80s and the first kind of electronic, you know, new romantic music. And then later in my teens, when I was at more probably university, independent grunge things, because I guess my brother was very much into that, and a lot of my school friends. So there was The Cure and New Order and The Smiths and The Jam and Madness and lots of independent Australian bands. And then after that, I guess there was things like Spandau Ballet and Style Council. But on the vocal side of things, I was really into the Eurythmics, and I loved Annie Lennox and her powerful vocals. And she was like sort of really sexy but in control, and had a great sort of feminist persona and attitude. I remember Sade was really big at the time, and I loved her sort of sultry, laid-back vocals. And I thought that the grooves that, you know, the band had put down were the coolest music I'd ever heard, really. We didn't get a lot of soul-influenced music in Perth, so that was kind of the first soul music that I'd ever heard, and I just loved it. Sade, you know, it was great. It wasn't until I actually moved to Sydney that I then heard more of that kind of music. Soul to Soul was really big at the time, and I really connected with that. And I was singing a lot of soul funk things in an original band. And that was my first taste of sort of the real funk and soul in its earlier form. So things like Sly and the Family Stone and James Brown and Peoples and things like that. And then sort of subsequently, you know, further on, I think the acid jazz thing came out of the UK and was quite big. So bands like Incognito and the Brand New Heavies, which of course drew on all that early funk stuff. And I mean, I think it was about the same time when I was in Sydney that I actually really put my head down and started listening to jazz seriously, and sort of was mostly Sarah Vaughan and Ella. And I guess I listened to them and copied them as closely as I could, and started singing those with my own jazz trio. And I found that that was the best way to learn, really, just doing it every week and singing the songs. I think obviously, you know, as a child I'd listened to them, but I hadn't really realised what I'd taken in. And then as a young adult, I started really studying the stuff, and that was really my first entry into jazz, really.
When you were growing up, did you listen to radio a lot or watch TV? And if you did this influence your music in any way?
Oh, TV. My parents were quite strict about us watching TV, so we weren't allowed, you know, too much. Most of our time, you know, in terms of out-of-school hours, were taken up with lessons like speech and drama and music and dance and tennis and things like that, other sports. I do remember on Saturday afternoons after we'd, you know, done the sport thing, that we'd sit around and watch old movies, and they were often things like, you know, musical things like Dean Martin and Bing Crosby and Elvis movies. And so I guess that kind of gave me a taste for the crooners' so to speak.
At what point in your life did you know that you wanted to become a singer?
I knew I wanted to be a singer from about, 8 or 9 years of age. But I didn't really realize at that time that, you know, I'd need to be taking my music lessons more seriously. I think as a rebellious teenager, you know, I was still studying the piano, but I wanted to focus more on the singing, and my piano teacher wasn't very inspirational, should I say, in a polite way. And so eventually my parents moved me to a teacher that would let me sort of play and sing at the same time. So I sort of kept interested in the piano. But I remember when I was about 16, my parents were very keen on me getting into a respected university course, not being a serious musician. And so they sort of encouraged me really just to study at school and get good grades and then get into university, which I did. And I studied a Bachelor of Science there, majoring in speech pathology or speech and language. And so I moved to Sydney after I finished my Bachelor of Science, and I started to sing jazz and write original songs. And I guess that's when I really realized, when I first started my own original band, that I would need to kind of improve my musicianship. And so what I did then was I took some short courses at, you know, conservatoriums and a lot of private sort of mentorship with jazz musicians that I was working with that I knew. And basically sort of tried to bridge the gaps that I'd left behind when I'd kind of given up the piano at sort of 16. And, I mean, I think, you know, this is a sort of constant challenge, and I mean, I'm always trying to improve my musicianship, and I think most musicians would say that, you know, it's a continually, the whole process is a continual learning process. And I don't think at any point in time you ever stop learning as a musician.
You know, Karen, I'm curious to know if you were stranded on an island, okay, or you were stuck somewhere and you only had 10 recordings with you, or 10 recordings that you wanted to bring with you, which ones would they be?
Well, my favorite records, that's a really hard one. Not necessarily in any order, but one of my favorite records is Michel Ndega cello. It's called Plantation Lullabies, and I got this when I was in the height of my sort of funk stage and had my own original band. And I was programming and writing a lot using Cubase, and I mean, the thing about this album, it's a great combination of live playing and programming, and it's quite hard, I think, to find that balance, and I think they've achieved that really well. It's really sexy music. It just, you know, her bass playing is really wicked, and the production's really slick. Her lyrics are really poignant and sort of thought-provoking, and her attitude is kind of very cool and harmonic. But some of it's quite heavy funk, so it's not for the faint-hearted. What else? Chet Baker, My Funny Valentine. I mean, that's a great recording. You know, it's just so classic, and his voice is a voice that you could listen to all day, I think. It's so understated, and his delivery was certainly a big lesson for me as a vocalist. You know, he's got that gorgeous sort of warm, tortured tone, and his lines are very simple and melodic. So I think sort of, you know, less is more, something I could take from Chet Baker. What else? Shirley Horn, Here's to Life. I've got loads of Shirley Horn records and I love them all, but the best one I think is Here's to Life, and it was quite a big hit, this record. I don't know, the selection of songs is just, they're beautiful songs on this record, Here's to Life, which is also a song that I recorded for my album. And the string arrangements by Johnny Mandel, you know, they, in a way they make the record, but it's also Shirley Horn's delivery of the material is she just brings so much wisdom, and sensitivity to it. And again, in a very restrained way. Carmen McRae, sings Thelonious Monk. This is an amazing record, with a fantastic trio that swings its pants off.
It's certainly one of her classic recordings. There's no doubt about that. I remember when it first came out, there was quite a bit of press regarding it, but not only the selections on the CD, but also her singing was just at the height of its zest. Carmen was just brilliant on this recording.
I think, you know, her interpretation of Monk pieces is so on the money, and it's not always easy, you know, they're not easy pieces to sing, and melodies and phrasings, you know, are quite difficult, but she just goes for it, and her attitude and understanding of the compositions is just great. So you sort of can imagine the session being recorded, it really comes to life. So that's a great record. Cassandra Wilson, Travelling Miles, is one of my favourite albums. It took a while for it to grow on me, but now I just love it.
What is it that you find so appealing about this particular recording, Karen?
I think I like the instrumentation, the combination of percussion and heavy use of guitar, both electric and acoustic. There's barely any piano on the record, but there's a lot of other ethnic instruments, and it sort of creates this really swampy atmosphere, which is great.
And of course, you know, there's Cassandra's singing as well, which is really so important.
And then, of course, you know, Cassandra's voice is just so gritty and restrained and well seasoned. And, you know, her approach is so unique and refreshing, and I guess one of my favourite tracks is her adaptation of Wayne Shorter's ESP. And, I mean, she's just so unique as a jazz singer. It really brings something fresh to the idiom. So, yeah, Cassandra Wilson would have to come with me.
Any pop and soul recordings that you would bring?
Who else? Aretha Franklin. One of my favourite albums is Aretha Sings the Blues. I just love the way Aretha can take a melody and completely make it her own, you know, and she gives the standard a whole new slant. I particularly like her ballad treatment of What a Difference a Day Makes, which is, you know, usually more an up-tempo tune, but she's amazing. She's such a liberating and sort of powerful singer, and she really wrenches the pain out of a song. So, yeah, Aretha definitely would be on that island. What else? Erykah Badu. Her album Baduism, which was, I think, her debut album, is a favourite of mine. It's really very sensual and funky, and again, full of attitude. I really like the way she's combined sort of jazz elements with what is essentially kind of a commercial sort of hip-hop, pop, soul R&B record or whatever. I saw her at the North Sea Jazz Festival a couple of years ago, and she was so focused on the stage, and it was a great show, and she was like a real diva. And but I mean, that aside, you can tell when she's singing that there's a lot of underlying harmonic knowledge, but she doesn't have to sort of display all her tricks at once. She's quite restrained, so it's great. That's a great album. Sarah Vaughan, I think Sarah is my favorite sort of jazz singer. In terms of the divas, and
any particular album that you prefer of Sarah's?
She has a great album called Sarah Sings Soulfully, and what I like about it is the lineup, because it's got Hammond throughout, which is quite different, not sort of a piano trio. Mind you, half of the personnel are unknown, but it's a great album with loads of ballads and quite a bluesy sort of feeling. But yeah, Sarah's one of my favourite singers, so she'd have to come with me, definitely. I've really been getting into sort of the Latin stuff lately, and I love this album called Samba 68, which is a reissue on Verve that I picked up recently by Marcus Vallet. And I was in Greenwich actually doing the jazz festival there, and I picked it up, and it had Summer Samba, or a song called Summer Samba So Nice, which he wrote, and I'd been doing it a lot live, and it always goes over really well. And so, I mean, I've just sort of fallen in love with that album over the last sort of few months, and it's exactly what you sort of would expect from a bossa nova album, very smooth and sort of, you know, two harmonic voices and orchestration, and it's all rather kitsch really, but it's very sweet. And last but definitely not least, another album, a Latin album, is called Tom and Joyce. It was just released last year actually, and It's a great CD. I love it. The arrangements are great, and sometimes it's fairly full on, but then it strips back to, you know, very much acoustic guitar and percussion, the Latin thing, and the gentle voices, male or female, sort of mixing. So yeah, Tom and Joyce, that would probably be the last of the 10 to make it onto the desert island with me and keep me sort of suitably happy at times and melancholy at others.
What vocalist influenced your style of singing, Karen?
Annie Lennox. She was a big influence when I was about 15, and I was first sort of thinking about singing seriously. And I used to sort of try and imitate her kind of power and projection and the way that she uses falsetto sort of as a contrast. And then Lisa Stansfield was very big at the time, and I was really into her and sort of could do a great impression of her. And it was really the first sort of soul singing, although it was kind of classed as white soul, but it was the first kind of soul voice that I could really relate to that I had heard. And then obviously the jazz divas, you know, as I said, Sarah is one of my favourite, and I think the thing I really like about her is her voice is really clear, and she's kind of got that classical sort of slightly operatic thing going on. And my voice is quite clear, so, you know, I felt like I had a kind of affinity to her tone and very much tried to emulate her when I was first learning jazz. And then, I mean, obviously people like Ella, you know, all jazz singers have listened to and copied her at some stage, more so Ella than Billy, because I think the recordings I have had of Billy were not her best, or, you know, quite later on, and they were quite gritty, and I sort of couldn't quite relate to those. And Aretha Franklin, I mean, you know, she was fantastic, and I guess I was more into her because I was doing a lot of soul singing earlier on in my career. And I just love the way that, you know, she can kind of take a standard and change it. I mean, I think I had a preconceived idea that, you know, as a jazz singer, you had to be kind of like all poise and very considered about your voice and what you were going to be singing. But I think Aretha just blows that notion out of the water, and she just sings with soul. And that to me is one of the most vital sensibilities that a singer has to have. Shirley Horn is a more recent influence. It was a British pianist, Julian Joseph, who told me to listen to her, and she just, vocally, I guess there's a lot of restraint. Her phrasing is amazing, and I managed to see her live when I was in Washington, D.C., which was a fantastic experience, and I think there's a lot of emphasis in London on scat singing, and it's not really my speciality, should I say. So I was kind of panicking a little bit and when I first got to London, but then I saw Shelley Horn perform in DC, and it just restored my faith in sometimes just singing the song in its simplest form, you know, as she does, and does so in a really, you know, poignant way. So I think I've learned the less is more concept from Shirley, and then more recently also Dee Dee Bridgewater. You know, I actually love the way she scats, and I know she draws a lot from Ella, but she's very soulful and sort of very free and fun, and sort of just goes for it, really. And I mean, her album Live at Yoshi's is a fantastic album, and that's also one of my favorites.
Do you ever listen to older recordings to maybe pick up a technique or a style that you might want to incorporate into your own singing?
Right now I'm listening to a lot of old samba and bossa nova recordings from the 60s, and I just love singing bossas. And I'm thinking about recording a sort of very much Latin-based album, so I'm sort of checking them out for instrumentation and thinking about how I can do things differently but achieve a similar effect, because it's unlikely I'll have access to a full orchestra like some of those records did have. And then like Shirley Horn recordings, I've listened to a lot of the bosses that she does, and sometimes it's just like listening to, you know, a drum pattern, picking up, you know, what seems to work there, and then, you know, translating that information to your band. I think, you know, as a singer and a producer, you have to be really clear about how you want things to sound in order to get that out of your musicians when you're in the studio. There's no point sort of saying, oh, can you play something else? I think you've got to be quite constructive and specific about what you want them to play, whether it's like a different hi-hat pattern or something else. But, so yeah, sometimes I listen to recordings and try and pick out elements of a groove or a swing, you know, thing that I think is working really well, and put it in my memory bank.
Do you look for situations that might be musically challenging for you, Karen?
Yeah, there are plenty of musically challenging situations, I think, you know, but it's very easy to keep yourself in a comfort zone and not learn or progress much. Well, some of the things, I try to learn as many new songs as I can, or write new songs, and then as soon as I've learned a song, perform it as quickly as possible. I think that's the best way to sort of tell if you really know something. What else can be challenging? I think it's challenging when you, as a singer, when you sort of have to play with a new rhythm section that perhaps you don't know any of the players, and you've been asked to sort of guest with them. And that really tests your knowledge of your charts and your ability to direct the band on the spot and kind of get out of them what you want. And I really like that. I mean, it's very exciting, and it's new players always bring something to a new arrangement or an old arrangement you've been doing for a while. And I think the audience can sense, you know, that sort of living on the edge and get a buzz sort of from that element of risk as much as the players do, really.
Now, let's say you had to form a dream band. Who in that band would you like to pick?
Oh, who would be in my dream band? I don't know. I would love to work with Lewis Nash on drums and Buster Williams on bass. I mean, they've done a lot of Shirley Horn recordings, which would, you know, that'd be a great rhythm section. Jeffrey Haynes, percussion, and Regina Carter on violin would be great. I've just started working with a violinist here in London, and so we're kind of working on a new lineup that is sort of violin, guitar, and bass and percussion, which will probably form the basis for my next album. And songs, what songs would I record? Well, I had been thinking about recording Summer Samba for some time now, or So Nice, it's also known as, but Babel Gilberto just did that on her debut, so that's out the window. But Softly is in A Morning Sunrise. I mean, I've written a fairly a good arrangement of that that seems to work well live. A Little Tear, which is like a more obscure Sarah song that I found in a real book. Day In, Day Out, standard, you know, obvious standard, which I've been working on an arrangement that combines a sort of Latin and swing thing. I Want to Be Loved, which is a really beautiful tune that I heard on a Shirley Horn album. And I love More, a song called More Than the Greatest Love. It's a cheesy old classic, but I love it, and I've been doing that as a bossa nova. I mean, there are loads and loads of tunes that I want to record, but it's also really important to me that I continue writing and that each time I record an album that I include more original material. I mean, I'm writing at the moment for the next album, which I hope I'll get to record later on this year. So we'll see what transpires.
Well, Karen, it's been a pleasure having you on the show today. I wish you well in the future, and maybe we can do this sometime soon.
Oh, thanks, Randy. Thanks very much for having me on the show and featuring some of the tracks from my album, Once in a Lifetime. It's been a pleasure. Thanks. And bye-bye from London.